This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
It's no secret. We have a few problems in this country. One problem is how we treat our veterans, and another problem is it often feels like things are upside down when it comes to our criminal justice system. Did you know that military veterans are incarcerated at higher rates and serve longer sentences than people who are not veterans? I'm going to give you a few of the facts in a moment, but I want to welcome back to the program the man who is an expert in just about anything, a veteran broadcast journalist, Dominic Carter. Hello, Dominic.
Hello, 4-4. How are you?
I am doing just wonderful. Thank you.
A great interview last night with our big boss, Mr. Katsimatidis, and the gentleman that was with him, and then when he stayed on longer.
Thank you. I'm sorry I didn't get to your complaints of all the gripes that you have, but we only had an hour, so we couldn't have fit it in.
Hey, before we get to the veterans, mm-hmm. can I ask you a question?
Please.
One thing I love about our segment is that it's not rehearsed.
Right.
And we have no idea what each other's going to talk about.
Yes.
Can you explain to me this horrible phenomenon of these protests against Israel and ultimately America that has surfaced on college campuses all over the country?
Well, look, I'm going to get into this in about 15 minutes okay. with an actual college student who had okay. a really interesting op-ed in The Hill yesterday. I think the idea of protests on college campuses, anti-war protests and really anti-everything protests on college campuses, it's not really new. I mean, you can go back to Berkeley in the 60s and Reagan speaking out at some of those Berkeley protests. It's one of the things that kind of catapulted him to be governor at that time. When I was going to NYU, I don't know what it was like, you know, when you went to college, but when I was going to NYU, there was a different protest every single day. And I was one of the few students that wasn't walking out. I mean, there'd be a class of 150 students, maybe a little less, maybe 120 students, and there'd maybe be a dozen of us that wouldn't walk out. We were the exceptions in a lot of those instances. So I don't think a lot of this is new, quite frankly.
See, I don't know. I just feel I call it like the Jay-Z effect. Like it's the 2024 version of anti-establishment. And so the cause happens to be everybody wants to be down. Everybody wants to be cool. I'm on the right side of history. But I'm sorry, Frank, these protesters, we can talk about whatever you want to talk about. They're not on the right side of history. And just imagine being a Jewish student, just trying to go to school.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm going to get into this a little bit okay. more in a few okay. minutes. But I think you know, that, well, look, well, I'm, film at 11. Okay. Put a pin on okay. that. And I know you're going to be listening on your okay. way home. So you can call yes. in during the segment if you want as well. I want to run this by you because you've covered and commented on a lot of different criminal justice cases over the years. I had no idea this was the case. I had a feeling that some of this might have been true, but seeing it in black and white like I did yesterday, it really was a little bit of a wake-up call for me. Veterans are now twice as likely as non-veterans to face incarceration. And a study found that nearly a third reported having been arrested at least once in their lives. Think about that. A third of veterans reported having been arrested at least once in their lives. In 1998, Department of Justice statistics counted about 156,000 veterans incarcerated in state or federal prison. By 2016, that number had fallen to about 107,000 veterans. More than a quarter of those had combat experience, but on average, veterans receive longer sentences than non-veterans, and they are more likely to have committed a violent sexual crime. And there's a lot of potential factors here. Obviously, the first one that comes to my mind is traumatic brain injury, PTSD.
PTSD.
And people are really still suffering even after they come home. my question for you, and other people have drawn racial aspects of this, socioeconomic factors, and that may play a role as well. My question for you is, what do we do about this as a country? Because to me, the fact that I pay pretty close attention to the news and the criminal justice system, the fact that I didn't even know about this, I think shows that very few people know about this. What do you think? What can we do about it?
What I find very interesting, Frank, and I'm serious about this. Every time there's a change of administration in Washington, the winning candidate, part of their platform is that we are finally going to do better things for our veterans.
Right.
We hear the same record over and over and over and over, and it never seems to get better. What I want to focus on is that I don't think you or I, we don't understand how real PTSD mm-hmm. is. And I've done a number of stories talking to soldiers. It's real. Their lives are changed forever. Medication. And oftentimes when they're involved in crimes, it's a lot more violent than what the average situation would be. So that would explain why they're receiving some more time,
and prison time. This is one of the things that I really give credit to Jim McGreevy with, because he has worked with a lot of veterans that end up getting involved in drugs or alcohol, and their discharge is something other than honorable. And he works to kind of get them through the system and on a better path. But they're saying the VA estimates that nearly 30% of veterans of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan experience PTSD, and veterans with PTSD have about a 60% higher likelihood of being arrested for a violent offense than veterans without it. Veterans with traumatic brain injuries, similarly, more likely to become involved in the criminal justice system. One of the questions that people are asking is, does the military need to do a better job of preparing soldiers, many of whom have been trained in the use of violence extensively, once they're back in the civilian population, not to use violence as a way to solve problems? To your point, that's why they're getting these stiffer sentences, because a lot of these crimes are very violent.
Absolutely. To answer your question directly. So a few years ago, I was in the D.C., Virginia area going to a party of for a teenager of someone that was in the military. It was on base or at a army a recreational area where there were cabins and so on. So we went to dinner that evening, and there were many soldiers there. Right. And I'm looking at these soldiers, Frank, and they were like between 18 and 21. That it would just end. And these were young kids just starting life, and they could very well be off to war. And then how do you come back from that? You don't just walk back and go right back into regular society. So, yes, to answer your question, the military, all branches of the military, needs to do a much better job. But we also need to stop just the talking of doing a better job for veterans. One of the questions I have is that you have veterans hospitals all over the country, but very few veterans really enjoy the services. Why is that?
Yeah, to your point, though, about talking rather than doing, the Justice Department, there's been a Justice Department report on this. There have been congressional hearings on this subject. And while all that's going on, the number of veterans behind bars has continued to grow. So it makes you wonder, what, if anything, is being done and by whom? If people want to weigh in on this, I'd love to hear from you. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. And I mentioned Iraq and Afghanistan, but it's not just an Iraq and Afghanistan thing. This includes Vietnam veterans, Gulf War veterans, and a number of other conflicts as well.
And remember, the military can prescribe the medication. They can't make you take it. So I'll wrap up my point with this. I remember many years ago flying down to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. And at the time, it was the military housing Haitians. This was before Guantanamo Bay turned into for terrorists and so on. And to even be at the military base for the Haitian immigrants, I could see how they develop PTSD from that.
Really?
First of all, it was like 110 degrees. You're right next to Cuba, right? And the officers could not walk around with uniforms that distinguished them as officers because a sniper could hit you. That was one of the things that we were told. And they separated the men and the women because several women had been gang raped by members, by other Haitian people that had been brought over from Haiti. You know what I'm trying to say. And so I'm there, and I'm just there, Frank, for maybe a day and a half. Same thing when I went with the military to Somalia, right? Frank, this is what I want you to understand about the military, right? So we arrive in Somalia. It's like 110 degrees in the day and like 30 degrees at nighttime. And the airport in Mogadishu was the military post. Mm-hmm. They didn't even have showers. They were just getting them up and running. So we had to wash with bottled water. Oof. And this is the life. And where they slept at, they had to have nets over the cots. You all slept on cots because of the huge bugs. Oof. We don't understand how good we have it here.
No, you're exactly right. And for you, that's a week, and it's a nightmare. For these folks, right, it's a way of life for 3 years, potentially.
That's right. That's right.
Is that your nasal spray?
Yes, it is. How do you know my nasal spray?
Well, I mean, it's in front of you. I hope it's yours. I hope you haven't pilfered it from someone.
No, it's my nasal spray.
So what would he have, allergies or something else?
Allergies, yes.
Okay, well,
yes,
so I just read in in the New York Times, they have an Ask Well section. Did you see it?
But folks, I'll be gone in a second from around the country, whatever city you're in. I want you to please call Mr. Morano and ask him, why do I call him Mr. 4-4? And ask him, you want an answer. And ask him, how does it feel to be number 4-4? The same number as Reggie Jackson. Okay. Anyway,
well, so I just read, they have an Ask Well section in the New York Times, which is actually pretty interesting, where you can write in and ask a doctor questions. Okay. And they ask a lot of really interesting questions. Just so happens, the question yesterday was this: nasal sprays help with my seasonal allergies, but I've heard they can be addictive. Is that true?
Oh,
and what should I do if I'm hooked?
Oh,
well, Dr. Edward McCool, who's an ear, nose, and throat doctor, said that an estimated 9% of people visiting ENT physicians have what's called rebound congestion, meaning that their sinuses become even stuffier than they were before using the nasal spray. So they end up using more and more of this nasal spray. So the sprays to watch out for are the ones that they that are characterized as nasal decongestants, which contain ingredients like oxymetazoline. So be careful with that, or phenylephrine. So be careful with that. Right, we don't want you getting hooked on nasal spray.
Well, I take the one. That's the one I take.
Okay.
You know, I don't know how to pronounce it. So I'm saying, hey, but you know what? This is how life is, right? So you know, I grew up in New York City.
Right.
In the projects. Make it. Get to buy a house in the suburbs, right? Love living in the suburbs. Love the fireplace. Love the pool. All the stuff that, you know, the amenities that come
bears.
With it. The bears. Right. And then I discover that I have allergies because of the trees, because of the grass, because of my cat. And so I have to get allergy shots, 3 shots once a week.
Oh, well, you know, it's interesting. There was actually a book called An Elegant Defense, and there's a chapter on childhood allergies, and they get into how children that grow up with either a lot of pets or a lot of siblings or both are far less likely to have allergies. So people that grow up more in an urban environment and then are exposed to all that tree pollen and bears and everything like that, they get it. Just be careful with that stuff. I'm worried about
it. Be careful with this.
Yes. Yeah, it's dangerous, potentially. It's habit forming.
Right. But I noticed you've talked about everything except for your cousin making the cake.
I'm working
on it.
I'm working. I may see her this weekend, so I have put in a request. So,
thank you.
You know, she gave my sister, who just moved into an apartment in Brooklyn, a lamp last weekend. So there are only so many outstanding Morano requests that she can be handling at a moment.
How's her pregnancy going?
So far, so good from what I said. She looks good. She said she feels good.
So folks, do me a favor. 800-848-9222. Ask Mr. Morano, why do I call him Mr. 4-4?
Thank you, Dominic. I'll see you tomorrow, my man. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. I'm going to get to your calls in a moment, but John, I don't know if he wants his last name mentioned, says, I can't call in with the story because I won't be able to talk through this without crying. But PTSD has many different forms, and sometimes it can be from the behavior and treatment from fellow enlisted members while stateside and feeling alone and lonely. Today, the VA has me rated at 70% for anxiety, major depression, and PTSD. I have a social anxiety which causes me to feel unsafe and not confident in myself. The wounds of the mind are horrifically devastating. Yeah, I absolutely buy that. And I've heard from a lot of stories from people like you who are experiencing that. I view this as a national tragedy. And I'm not suggesting that just because you've served in the military and you commit a violent crime, you should be dealt with less harshly. I'm not. I think you kill someone, you rape someone, you assault someone, you rob someone with a gun, you deserve to go to prison for the same amount of time, whether it was because you were abused as a child, whether it was because you were high, or whether it was because you are suffering from the after effects of a traumatic brain injury. What I think really needs to be done is a whole evaluation of getting veterans out of combat roles and into civilian life. It seems like a lot of what goes on here, and I'm speaking largely from ignorance, but not entirely, a lot of what goes on here is after you get your discharge, especially if it's something other than honorable, you are sent on your merry way. Yes, there are healthcare services available to you, but it doesn't seem like making sure you're integrated into society is much of a priority. So, there was a Supreme Court case back in 2009 called Porter versus McCollum, and it dealt with a wounded Korean War veteran named George Porter, who was convicted of killing his ex-girlfriend and her boyfriend. And in the court's ruling, which overturned Porter's death penalty sentence, it found that Porter's lawyers had failed to bring up his military service in their defense and determined that this amounted to ineffective counsel. So that Porter decision sort of gave license to the idea that veterans' military service and related mental health or substance abuse issues should be considered in criminal sentencing. And that ruling paved the way for expanding veteran treatment courts, which had been piloted in places like Buffalo. So today, there are more than 700 veteran treatment courts around the country. And their exact programming varies from state to state, but usually it combines things like therapy, substance abuse counseling, and drug testing. But a lot of veterans advocates want judges in all courts to think more about the role of a defendant's military background in sentencing. I mean, what do you think? If someone's a veteran and they commit a violent, horrible crime, should we give them a little bit of a break? Should their military service be considered by the judge in their sentencing? Last year, one group worked with the Council on Criminal Justice to draft a model policy for alternative sentencing options just for veterans charged with certain crimes. Is that what we need? The policy they're talking about emphasizes probation with treatment. Probation in conjunction with treatment in lieu of conviction for vets who have PTSD or traumatic brain injury. The thing that I worry about with that is always abuse of the system, is people committing horrible crimes and then trying to essentially get away with it by playing the veteran card. So I think it's a really interesting problem. And I think it's something that nobody has really dealt with adequately. There's a publication which covers a lot of veterans issues. It's called The War Horse. They have an interesting story on this. You can check it out at thewarhorse.org. But let me hear from you. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Let me begin with Ellen. Hi, Ellen.
Oh, hi. Well, I think it's the whole thing's a racket. I think it's the other way around. People who are attracted to violence, who are prone to violence, they sign up for the military where they have a green light to do anything they want in a war zone. A war zone is any country that we invade. Every man, woman, a child can be abused, killed, tortured by an American. Then they come back and they're still violent. And we say, oh, he's got PTSD because he was in a war zone. It's the other way around. He went there because he was violent to begin with, and he had a green light to go and be violent over there. Now you come back and cry that he's got PTSD. I don't buy it.
Well,
that's my take on it. It's a big racket,
Ellen,
to give them to be soft on them and to blame their war experience.
Ellen,
they were violent when they went in there, and they're violent when they come back.
Ellen, you'd agree that a lot of people join the military for financial reasons, or maybe to pay for college or something like that, right?
Yes. I don't know, to tell you the truth. I don't really know.
Okay, well, so I can tell you, I've had friends and family members, actually, that have joined the military because they've been in a tough financial spot, and they viewed this as a way to...
What do they think they're going to do? Well, they're going to go and kill people
Ellen, Ellen, they don't... when the military's recruiting you, they don't exactly advertise that you're going to be killing people, okay?
Well, it's, you don't need a high IQ to know that.
Ellen, so it sounds like you have there's zero sympathy for you for any veteran that's coming back with PTSD.
I'll say there is for a handful of them. People who are really have remorse, you know, like who? Like that guy, Timothy McVeigh. He saw those Iraqi troops surrendering and the Americans firing on them, burning them alive in their tanks while they were surrendering. And he freaked out. He said, oh my God, what the heck are we doing? He realized that he had been tricked into all this, good versus evil. We're good, they're evil,
Ellen,
and all
of,
that.
Ellen,
and
of I all think, the veterans course, that you're going to have sympathy for, it's a guy that killed 168 people with the Oklahoma City bomb.
I don't have sympathy, but I think he really had he took it the wrong way. His epiphany went dark.
Yes,
the wrong
right.
way that he went in and committed a terrorist attack.
And Ellen, I think there are all sorts of people, thousands, maybe tens of thousands, that are having that, what you called an epiphany, and it results in them being violent, not in killing 168 people, but maybe killing one person or hurting one person.
Well,
Ellen,
I'm not saying he didn't deserve the death penalty. I'm not saying he should have been acquitted or gotten off easy, but he's a prime example that everyone's says, he got what he deserved. But these people, I think most of them, 90% of them, they go in because they're prone to violence. We're in a Star Wars movie now.
You.
It's good versus
Ellen,
evil.
I disagree with you completely. I think most of the people that go into the military do so because they want to serve their country. They believe that America stands for something good and is going to stand up against oppression. Now, we can have a debate about whether that or not that's actually what the American military does. I think a lot of people that join the military do it for an opportunity to go to school, for an opportunity to make some money, and for maybe a tradition of service in a lot of cases. Everybody has a different story of why they go into the military. When you see the disparity between veterans going to prison and everybody else, something's wrong. I think maybe some of what you're claiming is accurate, that maybe people that want to hurt folks are more likely to choose a job where they can use a gun. But I think that's an extremely small percentage. I think a lot of times people get messed up either because of a brain injury, a traumatic brain injury, or because of difficulties dealing with PTSD. And the numbers bear that out. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Vincent is in Brooklyn. Straighten us out, Vincent.
Good morning, Frank. Frank, I have several. My father was in the during World War II in the Pacific Theater. My cousin Tom was in the Korean War. My brother was in the Vietnam War. I have several friends who went to Nam, and none of these people were violent. They were either called up like my father was, like my uncle was, and none of these people went there just to kick butt as this lady. And a lot of them came back. A couple of my friends had a hard time initially adjusting. Then they got into VA training programs. They went to school. And more often than not, these people were just wanted to serve their country. Or at the time, even I was caught up in the draft, but I was 4F for physical disabilities. But I had no choice. During the Vietnam era, I had to go down and register for the draft, and I was called up. But I couldn't disagree with them more. Most of my friends wanted to just serve their country, or they were just called up, and that was it. They weren't in college, and they had to go. And a lot of these people went out. They do good things with their life when they came out.
100%. Vincent, thank you. Let me squeeze in one more call here, and then I want to get into what's happening on college campuses right now in terms of a lot of folks feeling intimidated or anxious because of the anti-Israel protests that are going on in schools like Columbia. Read an interesting column on this in The Hill yesterday, and I've invited the writer of that column to join me. We're going to talk about it. But first, let me say hello to Al. Al, what do you think about all this?
Yeah, hi, Frank. Thanks for taking my call. First off, I just want to say congratulations on your national recognition.
Thank you. That's very
nice.
You
got a great team there. Matt Blaze is a true professional, Tony and the whole team.
No, believe me, their contribution is minimal.
No, but I just wanted to say, in regards to the veteran situation, you know, the veterans unfortunately didn't have the support system when they came back. We had a mechanic in our family for many years, and he had a son who was a really great mechanic, but he could never get it together when he came back from Vietnam, substance abuse problems. I think today he actually is passed away. Mm. But in fairness to the veterans, the country has to do more for them, because even if they have to go in for a procedure, say a heart procedure or anything, they send them to these VA hospitals, and they're horrible. So they got to do much more for the Vietnam veterans and the veterans in past wars.
Yeah, I agree, Al. And unfortunately, this is something, to Dominic's point, that you hear a lot of talk about. But aside from the establishment of these veterans courts, and there's only 600 of them, I don't know that you've seen a lot of action on it. And I think this should certainly be an issue of concern that's nonpartisan, that everybody should work to rectify. We'll get into it. Hey, what about these protests at schools like Columbia? If you're a conservative, should you have any tolerance for what they're doing? One student says maybe yes. We'll get into it straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Hi, it's Ernie Anastas. You know, your thoughts can affect how you feel, and how you feel can impact your thoughts. Addressing your mind and body connection is the key to improving your overall wellness. Bergen Newbridge Medical Center is the largest hospital in New Jersey, providing comprehensive, equitable, compassionate, and high-quality emergency inpatient and outpatient medical care, plus mental health services and substance use disorder treatment. The Bergen Newbridge team can address your total health needs in one convenient location. Call 201-225-7130. For an appointment or newbridgehealth.org.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Songs of all time, and a birthday bumper music selection from Dr. Gracelyn Santos, who is not only a terrific dentist, but a terrific newspaper columnist, mother, and person. Happy birthday, Gracelyn Santos, and excellent song selection with the Bee Gees. All right. On a much more serious note, you don't have to look far to find people that are upset about what's happening at college campuses. This was the scene at Columbia University, for instance, this week. NYPD, KKK, these protesters at Columbia, at Yale, at NYU have in many instances camped out, masked, and they're saying just vile things. Many Jewish students say they don't feel safe. Many Jewish faculty members have indicated they don't feel safe. As part of this, Columbia University, which seems to be ground zero for all this, they have given students the option of completing the rest of their work for this semester remotely so that they can avoid going into class. The Columbia University president is being criticized by everybody, as are some of the other college presidents. Some people that think she's being too tolerant of these protesters have called for the governor to call in the National Guard. They don't like that some of these colleges are having protesters arrested. For instance, at NYU, I saw one headline where faculty members and students who are supposed to be on campus were arrested for being on campus because of the nature of the things that they were saying. People think that she's either being, or that all these colleges are being either too tolerant or too tough. One of the things, though, that I've been somewhat surprised by is the silence from large swaths of the conservative movement. If I had a nickel over the last 4 years for every time I saw a meme from someone saying something like, "We don't care about your feelings," or your feelings are hurt, boo hoo, or you need a safe space, that means you're a snowflake, I would be a wealthy, wealthy man. What we heard repeatedly is that if liberal students were offended or depressed or triggered by conservative activism, shouting things like Blue Lives Matter, shouting things like there are only two genders, shouting anything that is traditionally conservative, tough. You're offended, tough. And I have to tell you, that was an argument that really resonated with me. Sure, who cares about your feelings? Well, now, while there have been a couple of incidents of violence, by and large, most of what we're hearing is from Jewish students and other supporters of Israel saying they don't feel comfortable. They feel anxious. Is that any different from a student that's upset and triggered by hearing Blue Lives Matter or there are only two genders? Well, I read one op-ed in The Hill that really, I think, spoke to the voices that I've been waiting to hear on the right on this. It's written by Juan Villasmil. Juan Villasmil is someone that I've never spoken to before this moment. An Intercollegiate Studies Institute editorial fellow at The Spectator World and a Young Voices contributor. I'm going to link to this piece on my Facebook page. Juan, welcome to the program.
Hey, welcome to the program. I'm glad you actually liked it. I joined the show earlier in the afternoon, and I thought the author liked it, and he was ready to call me an anti-Semite, and I was like, "Hey, I don't know if you know who I am, man." Like,
well,
I'm
so one, let's educate people as to who you are. Now, are you a college student?
So I actually graduated in 2023, and I'm probably going to go back to college to Georgetown this fall.
Got it.
I haven't signed the actual paperwork yet.
Got it. Okay. So you're a young person. Or what are you, about 21?
22.
Okay. When it says you're an Intercollegiate Studies Institute Editorial Fellow, what is that? Tell people what that is.
Yeah, so ISI is, as they call it, as the youth calls it, is an institute. It was actually started by Wilma Buckley, and they help some young conservative journalists, young conservatives more broadly, get jobs, either in academia or in the journalism sphere.
Got it.
I'm not completely sure if I'm going to be a journalist for most of my life, but when I graduated, it seemed like something that I wanted to do and something that I enjoyed. So I applied for this scholarship, and they placed me with the Spectator.
Got it. So you're a conservative.
I am. I'm pretty conservative. All my publications show that.
Would you consider yourself a big supporter of Israel as well?
I don't know. I think I am, like, traditionally speaking, like, I'm more on the Israel side than the Palestinian side. I don't think it's, like, the issue that I will die on the hill for.
Got it. Okay.
But apparently it is for a lot of people.
But you're not someone that's, for instance, calling for Israel to be abolished or anything like that. You're not hostile, openly hostile.
No way. Okay. I think those people are impractical and radical.
Okay, so let's talk about what's happening at college campuses and the subject of this op-ed that you wrote, which I just linked to. People can check out facebook.com/MoranoFam. On Friday, Columbia University cracked down on these pro-Palestinian campus protests, and it led to the arrest of more than 100 students. You're saying that conservatives must defend free expression, including rights of pro-Palestinian protesters. A lot of people, they hear the vile things that some of these protesters are saying, and they're saying, look, this is horrible. No student who is just trying to get an education should ever be subjected to this kind of thing. There's all sorts of hostility from these protesters towards these Jewish students. And that's just wrong. Why should we be tolerant of that kind of speech?
Yes, that's an excellent question. It's a very American question, too. When you look at the precedent in this country, especially, you know, listeners, Google Skokie right now. We have defended the free speech of some of the people that advocate for the most evil of causes in world history. Even people that have advocated in vague ways for genocide and things of this sort. In Skokie, right, Nazis wanted to march in a town that was predominantly Jewish to a degree that it was believed to be the city with the highest percentage of Holocaust survivors outside of Israel. In that town, a Jewish lawyer by the name of David Goldberger said, I disagree with his people, but they have a right to do this. And according to the principle of free speech, of free association, free expression, these people must be allowed to do this, even if it's disgusting and gross. A Jewish man. This same principle has been upheld consistently. Especially at universities, we've let white supremacists talk. We've let black nationalists talk. Why? Not because universities endorse this stuff. Because in the principle of free expression is all about this. Alexis de Tocqueville talked about this. This is the king philosopher on the right, right? He talked about how if free association is permitted, that's good. Because we will have strong factions, but we will know who these people and these strong factions are. We're going to reduce conspiracy. We're going to reduce the ability from these people from organizing behind the scenes under the ground. And this is good. So I think that the violence there, that the actual threats should have been suppressed. I think having a police force is probably a good idea to have there to avoid any violence. I think that maybe the tents are not a good idea. Like, yeah, like we don't, as a private university, you don't want tents in your backyard. You don't want tents there. But the conservatives talking about shutting it down and sending the National Guard
are these people crazy? Well, like, if you want to send the National Guard for this protest, which is actually mostly peaceful, then we should send drones to a bunch of these other protests in the past. Like, we should have argued for, like, a nuclear bomb of BLM protest.
With people just tuning in, we're talking with Juan Villasmil. He is an editorial fellow at The Spectator World and a Young Voices contributor. I've linked to this op-ed. You know, it's interesting. One of the people that defended the rights of the Nazis to march through Skokie was Alan Dershowitz. Alan Dershowitz is on TV and radio every day saying that what we're seeing at college campuses now is essentially systemic anti-Semitism, and that this should not be tolerated in universities, particularly universities that get funding directly or indirectly from the taxpayer. What do you say to that? What do you say that to the, you know, folks that may say, look, we're indirectly supporting these universities, and there's no reason Jewish students should feel intimidated or afraid to go to class?
Yeah, what I would say to that is, I'm sure there's a lot of anti-Semitism. I'm sure that a lot of people at those protests are not just anti-Zion. I'm sure they hate the Jews. And that's wrong. I disagree with them strongly. They're not my friends. But being hateful is not illegal. Actually, if you're going to suppress the speech of hateful folks, in your view, that might result in more violence. Like, what we saw is that right after they try to shut down this protest by sending police and riot gear, as if this were a BLM riot. It wasn't a BLM riot. They're trying to portray it in this way. There's this university professor, I think his last name's Davidai, who's trying to portray this as, like, actual terrorism. And again, maybe some of these folks like terrorism. Maybe some of these folks are insane in the head. But this is not terrorism. These are the super wealthy students singing stupid songs and dancing around and talking about decolonization. I disagree with them strongly. They probably hate my guts. But they have a right to do what they're doing. They have a right to protest. And even if we get into the intricacies of law and private property rights, and the university can technically just shut down anything, okay, sure. You're right. Like, the university has covered their tracks well. They can shut down speech. But if you're seriously going to tell me that you have no problem with universities using broad safety as language to shut down speech, I have a problem with you, because universities are exactly the place where protests have been carried on for generations. Universities are exactly the place where you're supposed to see protests.
So you believe, Juan, just to
shut down the speech, you can shut down any speech.
So just to put a button on this, some of the things that we've heard at some of these protests, and some of the things we've seen include burning of the American flag, but some of the things that we've heard at some of these protests include, we say justice, you say how, burn Tel Aviv to the ground, Hamas, we love you, we support your rockets too. You're of the belief that if you value the First Amendment, especially if you're conservative, that no matter how ugly speech is, no matter how hateful, no matter how radical, even if it's people openly siding with a group like Hamas, that's protected free expression and free speech under the First Amendment.
Well, yeah, that's the precedent. That's what's in the books. That's the historic principle that we've attached our movement to. How many conservatives have called themselves free speech maximalists? No restrictions. And now they're just looking away because in this case, they agree with the people arguing to shut it down. Not based on free speech, but based on a foreign policy decision. And this is exactly the kind of debate that our founding fathers would allow. This is about supporting an external neighbor, and a portion of the population disagrees with this strongly, and they're showing up. Shutting it down will not lead to any big change in the social sentiment. It will probably create more radicalism, more tension.
I,
honestly, like, I,
what,
I,
One,
I don't know exactly what I would have done if I were a university administrator, because I understand that this is bad for them, because they have a large portion of donors and students are very angry. But probably if you just let these folks protest, right, you took down the tents and you just had the police nearby, that would have been less problematic. Now what they've caused is like a nationwide movement. Like they've actually made the situation worse.
Juan, I got to applaud you for your consistency on this intellectually and otherwise, and standing by your principles, which I think a lot of your fellow travelers on the right have not been doing throughout this whole debate. Juan Villasmel, you could check him out at the Spectator World. You could read this op-ed in The Hill. I just linked to it. You could read it and let me know what you think. Juan, thank you.
Thank you very much. Have a good one.
If you want to comment on any portion of this conversation, you can give me a call at 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight. Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
There is nothing that is wrong. Wanting you to stay here with me. I know you've got somewhere to go, but won't you make yourself at home and stay with me? And don't you ever leave. Lay down, Sally, and rest here in my arms. Don't you think you want someone to talk to? Lay down, Sally.
Eric Clapton singing Lay Down Sally, a birthday bumper music selection from the lovely and talented Gracelyn Santos. We're going to get to your phones in a moment, 800-848-9222. Well, actually, look, I'll save what I was going to mention for a little later because a lot of you were eager to comment. Let me begin with Jerry in New Jersey. Hi, Jerry.
Yeah, hi, Frank. You know, I'm happy to see that, you know, you're taking on a guest and it's a person from the right that's talking about freedom of speech, even for, say, Palestinians or people who are partial to the Palestinian arguments. And you were talking about Skokie. I heard that. And that's back from the 70s. I remember that. And even Alan Dershowitz agrees. Now, the only thing that I feel lacking often is the people from January 6th. It seems to me that they're not getting a fair shake, because when it comes to free speech, I want you to think about those people that just stepped on those grounds that day.
Agreed.
And it seems like a lot of people, though, on the radio, because of what happened to, you know, I don't want to say who, and we're not going to point fingers tonight, but there's a lot of commentators on the radio. I'm going to keep you out of this completely. I'll just say other people on the radio stations across all radio stations are afraid, because of what happened to Fox News with the suits, because of what happened with, that was about the election, and that's part of January 6th too, and what happened to Mike Lindell, what happened to Rudy Giuliani.
Yep. Yeah, no, I agree with you, Jerry. I think, look, and that's one of the reasons I discussed the court hearing on the use of Sarbanes-Oxley to prosecute the nonviolent protesters here, because the people that are still locked up, and again, I'm not talking about the violent protesters, the people that assaulted cops with batons and, you know, broke flags and tried to assault people, you know, shame on those people. I have no problem with those folks being incarcerated. But for the people that were totally nonviolent, the people that have prosecuted them essentially have adopted Donald Trump's version of what that hearing was on January 6th, because Trump was saying that it was not just an administrative hearing that that was pro forma, that it actually was a governmental function. So they're prosecuting these guys for stopping a governmental function. I don't know the the exact words that they use under Sarbanes-Oxley, but it's a stretch, and Sarbanes-Oxley has never been used like this before, and it's one of the things that I hope the Supreme Court will strike down. I agree with you, Jerry. 800-848-9222. There's a whole bunch of Steves on the line. All the Steves that are holding, we'll get to you. I don't want to force you to make a complex point in 15 seconds. This is the other side of Midnight. 800-848-9222. We're on Twitter as well at Frank Morano. That's Frank Morano. Until next hour, help control the pet population. Get your dog or cat spayed or neutered.
This is Greg Kelly for Priority Gold. What does it mean to be America's precious metals dealer? It means that you're in touch with the hearts and minds of those who love this country, value our freedom, and want to protect the future. Priority Gold is that precious metals dealer. They've helped thousands of Americans back their retirement with solid gold and silver. Call Priority Gold at 888-506-6439. Receive free shipping, free storage, a free investment guide, and one of the best purchase experiences in the industry. Call now or go to PriorityGold.com.